And I just want to point out, Bev, you're wearing, will you just say what t-shirt you're wearing right now?
Well, I'll say that in 1983 was the year of the big blizzard and there were all those scratches. And that was the year you won, Myron. Was that your first win?
Yeah.
So that's the year I scratched. And then the next year I finished. And that's the t-shirt. 1984. I finished 22nd. I would have been in the top 20 if I hadn't fallen asleep outside of Guisluck. And Dan Boya came and found me. And that was the year Myron scratched. And that was also the year that Dan Rick Swenson, he speed up the race. In 46 hours, he finished the race. We used to go to like Jody Mantle's and seniors and Tulixac, have dinner and go to Bogus and light a fire, and people would just, and then Rick speeds the trail up the year I finished, and I finished in 76 hours and he finished in 46, and it completely changed the way we ran this race. So, and you know, I mean, to see what Pete's doing and these guys are doing and gals are doing these days, with great dog care, food. It's just amazing to me, the science of.
So the race has just gotten faster and faster compared to its early. How long was the race, I guess, when the first race? Do you know how long that took?
Well, it was into the third day. I don't know the exact number of hours, but that first year, of course, we had a 24-hour break in the middle, so that made that longer, so it's a little hard to judge how long it was. Also, we didn't go around Whitefish. There have been some alterations to the course over the years, but the general trend has been this way. It was kind of like a three-day event until 84 became a two-day event, and then in 92, Jeff King and I did it in 37 hours, it became a day and a half event. And that completely changed things because it was decided that, well, if they can do it in 37 hours, that must be possible. And so that's been kind of the goal ever since. It depends on the trail conditions and that sort of thing. But 37 to 40 hours is kind of the mark nowadays to get around. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. And one of them, of course, is the fact that the trail is a little better marked and secure, you might say. In other words, you're not going to get lost. But there's the factor of dog care, dog feeding, dog breeding, all those things have created a situation where most competitive teams have dogs that are capable of going around the route in 37 hours if the trail is perfect, 38 hours. And most teams in the early going were not capable of doing that. There were just not that many dogs that trotted that fast in most teams in that era. But it's been refined down to that now.
The dog pound was right outside KYUK. And we worked here, John McDonald and I. And so that's how we started our first team, was dog pound dogs. And we just look at them in the eye and say, oh, this dog's name is Ilk, and he's going to run the Cusco Quip 300. And then Myron and folks like Rick Swenson and Jeff King, you know, started, we started getting better breeds in dogs, too. And so John just posted his finishing team from 1982, and it's a motley-looking, handsome group of dogs. and it just compared to, say, in our last years of running dogs, both Myron and I no longer have a team, it was a whole different team, you know. So it evolved, and I was going to ask Pete what his best time around the track had been with the K300.
I think the traditional route going through Whitefish is 40 hours, some minutes. And then 1 year where we just went straight to Antioch and back on the river was 35 hours. But, yeah, it's interesting. You know, you feel like some aspects of the sport have evolved a lot, like the feeding and the dog care and the bloodlines and things like that. But like Myron mentioned, you know, a 37-hour Cusco in 1992, so the speeds haven't really evolved a whole lot in the last 25 years. It it really comes down more to weather and trail conditions. If we have any kind of a slow trail and weather that would slow us down, it's just going to make for a slower race. And with a perfect trail, then, you know, you get a little bit speedier times. But I've kind of asked myself that question too: is it possible to do it, you know, faster, 2 or 3 hours faster? And I don't know. It's stayed the same for so long now that you kind of wonder if it's possible to do it much faster than we've been doing it for the last 25 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
I want to point out that because the exotic dog breeds are sort of mentioned from time to time as being the whole answer, and I do want to point out that in 1992, when I went around the trail in 37 hours, I was using 100% dogs that were relatives of the first real good dog breeding I ever had, which was a cross between an Anvik dog named Monkey from Rudy Domoski and an Akiak dog named Brownie, part of the Williams kennel. And I ended up getting both of those dogs, and that breeding was an outstanding breeding, and it became a significant part of the Butcher and Swenson kennels through that era. And my whole team was based on that breeding, and they were able to really cover ground. They never got tired. That was the main thing. And so local dogs did that. I mean, those are dogs from this area that had been in this area for a long time, of course. I don't know their exact origin of those two lines of dogs. But I certainly acknowledge that my breed primarily came from those two dogs. And the Williamses, I think, still have some of that breed in their team. I'm helping Nate DeHaan train right now, and last night I was out with his team, and I had in lead a dog from that breed running around the track last night. It made me feel good.
Yeah, and the same, because Myron had this breed, and so that's ended up to be where we started improving, was getting some dogs from Myron, getting some dogs from the Yukon, a pup from Rick Swenson, all with that same lineage background. So it's kind of neat to know that. And it was sort of sad when all of a sudden we realized this dog is the last of our breed that we started putting together a team that was more competitive than those early years.
And Pete, will you talk about where are your dogs from? What's their bloodline?
Lately, it's been this whole my whole team that I have, basically the whole yard that I have, is out of a female that I bought from Jeff King in 2011, so, or 2010, when he retired for a year or two. But my dogs are all really closely related, and I just, when I was trying to create my own kennel in my own yard, I thought, you know, who better to go to than the 9-time champion? So his dogs have proven for years that that they did well out here, and it's worked out well for us.
Yeah, so 9-time champion Jeff King of the K300, and he's coming back again this year, like he tends to do year after year. Your Leif Seth Olsom, who won the Iditarod most recently, he's going to be coming along with a field where you have several top 10 finishers, Pete, including yourself of Iditarod finishers. And has the race always attracted this caliber of the best mushers around?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We get lucky the first year. Actually, the first year, the first renowned musher to sign up was old Joe Reddington. And when that entry fee came in the mail, I figured, well, we get a chance here. This is a guy who kind of was the founder of the Iditarod, plus he was an official big-time race person at the time.
And do you know which K300 that was?
That was the first year.
Oh, the first one.
Yeah. And he signed posters.
It was the first. Not only was it the first year, but he signed up in the first week or two. When we opened the entries, he signed up right away. And then it, closely after that, it was followed by Swenson and Butcher and two or three other big names. And all of a sudden, we had a race. And we've never really had a year where we didn't have big names. Recently, it's just automatic. We get a significant share of the top finishers in the previous year's Iditarod. I like to think they run the Iditarod to find out if they're good enough to come out here, you see.
And yeah, I believe that too. So, and they will say that. And now, so Pete has won 4 years in a row, and so on social media you see a little bit of from Jeff King, you know, "I'm coming, Pete." You know, so how do you prepare for all that when everyone's gunning for you, Pete? Gosh,
I don't think it's much different than any other year. I fully expect everybody coming out here to be well prepared and come out with the same goal in mind, which is great. It makes, I think, the level of competition is what makes this event super special, and that's where you get all the prestige from and the history, and it's fun to race against all these top mushers and guys like Jeff King and some guys that don't come out anymore, like Martin Boozer, and you know, these were the guys that we watched growing up and kind of idolized. So it's always been fun to have all this great competition come out here.
And Pete, what was that like? Like you said, you watch these great mushers, and then one day you're competing against them. What was that like for you?
Yeah, it's fun, you know. It's kind of a little bit intimidating at first to share the trail with people like that, but you know, they're all great guys and great gals and fun to compete against, and it's you know, share stories and checkpoints and talk about this and that, and so it's always a good time.
I'm interested in the economics of this race. So the purse has increased this year. It's been increasing for many years, and so the K300, the purse is $160,000. Bogus Creek 150 has a $60,000 purse. Akiak Dash, a $30,000 purse. So that adds up to $250,000 in prize money just for these three races. And then the smaller races are $20,000 each given out. And meanwhile, you have the Iditarod Sled Dog Race and the Yukon Quest, which have both announced decreases in their prize money. So the Iditarod slashed its payouts by $250,000 and the Quest by $10,000. How has the K300 been on the rise while these larger races are going in the opposite direction?
Well, that's a very simple answer from my point of view. Those races both have primarily paid staff. And speaking with more knowledge of the Iditarod, because I kind of follow that a little more closely than the Quest, they not only have a paid staff, they have a fairly highly paid staff and a fairly large staff. It's grown over the years. And K300 has almost entirely a volunteer staff. Our paid people are part-time and underpaid. And they're told when those two people get hired that this is kind of a volunteer position. And that's an important aspect of our deal, because you can't expect people to volunteer to do their job if there are people in the same organization that are strictly highly paid professional people doing their job. It's very difficult to pull that off. And I saw the change myself in the Iditarod. I was on the board, and I was a volunteer a long time ago. I was a board member in the early 80s, and during that time I was a race judge and, you know, did some other volunteer stuff for them. And during that time is when they switched over to starting paying staff a pretty good salary. And I noticed that people in the villages were abandoning the race in terms of volunteering because they weren't getting paid. Or they weren't getting paid enough. I remember one guy told me he wasn't going to take part that year because they didn't offer me enough. And I thought, boy, if we ever had that happen in the K300, we'd be in tough shape because we ain't offering anything. And so that's the biggest deal. Of course, you have to have sources of revenue. And once you have those sources, then it's how you spend it. And we spend almost all of our money on purses. And that's the kind
difference.
Of the end of the discussion in terms mm-hmm. of why we can go up and the others go down, because they kind of what they do is the purse is what's left over. That's kind of how both of those races approach their purse.
We had some tough years, you know, early on to where it was that we had some lean years, but we survived that. We didn't have to put, you know, Joe Rennie didn't mortgage his home to make the Iditarod happen in the early days. And so, yeah, there were some lean years, but, you know, our merchandise, our big selling items, our fundraising efforts. I mean, right now, our race manager is a teacher. You know, she teaches at Ayupun and has done an incredible job of gathering a good team behind her of volunteers, you know, to help her put on this race. But
and that race manager is Madeline Reichard.
Right, the great Maddie Reichard. And she and her family. And, you know, once you're a race manager, like when I was a race manager, the whole family was involved. Everybody was involved. You know, our living room was full of merchandise around Thanksgiving and didn't quit till January. So Maddie has a lot of family. Her family's very involved. And families just are involved here from year to year. Not only do we have a lot of people coming back from year to year, but a lot of new folks that enjoy being a part of the race. Jesuit volunteers going out to the communities to help with checkpoints. All the checkpoints have incredible volunteers. And I think that's the beauty. I mean, we have Laureen Steve. She's been cooking in Kalskeg since the very beginning, you know. It's a wonderful thing.
I got one story about fundraising that kind of explains how we've made money over the years. It happened right here at KYUK, as a matter of fact, way back when. We were promoting our benefit concert here, Bev and I were. Corey Flintoff was the person on the microphone. It was on the TV studio in here back when there was live TV, and this was for the news. We were doing a little promotion for the benefit concert, which was to happen the next night, and Bev and I were talking about the various acts that were going to be there and how that there was going to be $10 entry fee and how we hope to make a bunch of money so that we could pay the purse, you know, that kind of thing. And at the conclusion of that little presentation, I said, and we have one special promotion for tomorrow night, and that would be this. Bev has agreed to sing Zippity Doodah if we get more than $1,000 in donations tomorrow night. So everybody turn out for that show, because we all want to hear her sing Zippity Doodah. And by God, I think we got $1,200. But she didn't sing Zippity Doodah.
You sure? I sing it so well today. But yeah, it's just been a crazy, crazy 40 years of just so much with the K300. And I can't say enough. Thank you, Myron, for, you know, talking us all into it and believing that we could do this, and into the communities that the race follows, and even the communities that the race doesn't follow. There's just so much support. And to see folks like Mike Jr. grow up here and Richie Deal grow up on this river, and Isaac Underwood, and you, Pete, as we retire from mushing dogs. Of course, Myron's back on training again for Nate, but it just to see that continued family involvement is huge in keeping this race successful and people wanting to be here at that time. I mean, it's just so cool. And I don't know, Pete, I just often think, Pete, I wonder, like, when was that moment that you realized ah, this is a career. This is what I'm going to do. Do you remember that?
I don't think it was ever one single moment, but, it has just kind of turned into, you know, wanting to do the Cusco 300 and then wanting to do the Iditarod, and all of a sudden, you know, we're 10 or 12 years into full-blown racing and caring for dogs every day of the year. So it's just kind of evolved, but definitely right after high school, you know, I had a lot of interest in it and at least wanted to do one K300. And then, like I said, at least when I did it, it just kind of went on and on now and pretty full-blown.
I mean, Pete's so different from me. So I finished the Cusco 300 and I go, okay, enough of this. And thank God the Bogus Creek was started. I go, oh, this is more my kind of race. So I kind of went the other way. Okay, I'm going to only run races that I get back to my own bed at time. But then there's Pete and Mike and these young 30-some-year-old mushers that they, you know, just went for it. And it's awesome.